Tonight on RT1 Television, the second in a three-part series goes out. It's called Crimes and Confessions, and this week it looks at the fallout from the Salins train robbery in 1976 and the fight for justice that the men accused have fought for over the past three decades. Now, Nicky Kelly and Oscar Brannock alleged widespread torture and violence in order for them to give Gardaí forced confessions. And in a moment I'll be speaking to reporter Mick Pilo. But first, here's a clip from tonight's programme. It outlines the level of violence that both Nicky and Oscar had to endure at the hands of some of the investigating officers.
From an early stage in the Bridewell, the sheets of paper were going around to make a statement or sign a statement. Blackjack was produced at one stage, and any time you didn't give the answer, that's when you got hit. A lot of the bruising was managed with a technique to prevent from becoming too obvious, using the equivalent of rubber hoses.
We were taking steps down into a tunnel. When I saw that the gates were closed and there was a bunch of detectives there and there's a bunch behind me, my heart sank. And I remember thinking, this is it. You're going to get the beating of your life.
And he goes on to say that he did. Mick, you're very welcome. Thanks for being
here.
So the Salins train robbery, will you set the scene for us? What happened back in 1976?
Yeah, in March 1976, early in the morning, what looks like a very sophisticated planned robbery took place of a train between Cork Dublin mail train, basically carrying a lot of money. I think £200,000 at the time was a huge amount of money in 76, was stolen by an armed group of men. The rumours were that it was an IRA, it was an IRA heist, but the Gardaí focused on a newly formed political party, the Irish Republican Socialist Party, a party of the left. And it focused on particular members of that party. And Nicky Kelly and Oscar Brannock, Brian McNally and John Fitzpatrick were four men who signed incriminating statements saying that they robbed the train. And it became, you're too young to remember this, Claire, I think.
Just about.
But for those, this is just to say to this is a standalone programme in a three-part story. But it stands alone on itself. But those people who think they know the Salins train robbery story and the plight of these men, I think we tell it in a very new, innovative way. For those who don't know, people like yourself.
Yeah, I thought I knew the story because it was in the headlines when I was growing up, because it went on for years, as you'll explain now in a moment. But it's not until you sit down and watch this that you realise, you know, how big this was at the time. I mean, it was a huge event and still is for these people who are living it.
And you see, the thing is, for those of you who don't remember it, and as you say, too young to remember it, I think younger viewers are people that are not so young. Now, I'm not saying you're not so young, Claire. But that generation and the next generation, my kids are saying, cheap, they're fascinated, shocked that the revelations of this. And they said, this kind of stuff happened in this lovely country of ours. They're kind of going, oh my God, I don't believe it. Now, I think in some way, last week, the reaction from last week's programme, people would be forgiven for thinking there was a few rogue Gardaí that were acting outside the law. This story this week brings it on, tonight's story brings that into another level. And I think that is the important thing we need to hold on to in this, that there's another dimension to this. It's not just a few rogue Gardaí that Nicky Kelly and Oscar Brannock had to deal with.
So they were arrested, they were charged. Then take us through what happened.
They were arrested, they were charged. They, for the first year, the book of evidence wasn't produced because the Gardaí were trying to put the evidence together against them. The only evidence against them was their own incriminating statements. And the statements the Gardaí said, we witnessed them telling us they robbed the train. Mm-hmm. That was the only evidence against them. So when they were brought to court, there was a 65-day trial. And in the middle of that trial, they were screaming that the judge was falling asleep. it looked like it was mad. It looked like this is crazy. They're not getting a fair trial.
So it was the three-judge special criminal court.
Special criminal court.
And one of the judges was seen to be sleeping. And you have the man who was happened to be visiting the court on a particular day who witnessed this. And he was eventually used as an official witness to say, I saw the judge was asleep.
Yeah, and this man, it's extraordinary what happened to this man. It was absolutely amazing to find this man alive today, who's 80-something years old, in his late 80s. He was a Fine Gael, a member of the Fine Gael party, upstanding member of the community, just happened to call into the Special Criminal Court because he missed an appointment. And he sees this judge sleeping and he's very annoyed. And he writes to Garrett and he comes back and he gets involved in the court case. And he says, he swears an affidavit that he's, the judge is falling asleep and helps the defence try to bring this case to stop the court, the trial. And he gets a strange visit by the guards and is basically told, if you don't withdraw that affidavit, we'll consider you a subversive. And it's extraordinary to hear that from this man now. Martin Reynolds is his name. Extraordinary man. Mm-hmm.
And he was steadfast. I mean, even now in the interview that you have just done with him, he said, I wasn't going to change my statement. He said, I know what I saw. I wasn't going to be intimidated. And he wasn't. And he stood firm. But it didn't really make much odds.
It made no difference. The court, basically the judge died. He wasn't well. He shouldn't have been there. But the courts, a new trial.
In 78.
And despite the medical evidence that said that they had, all of them had, and there was two or three different doctors, had medical evidence that all of them had wounds that were consistent with their allegations.
Mm-hmm. And there were international organisations involved here, human rights organisations.
Amnesty International basically put pressure on the government because Amnesty International came over and did a report on 28 cases that they were looking at. And they were saying, look, the government needs to set up an independent inquiry into this because there's systematic allegations by a group of detectives who seem to be specialised in coercing statements from people, from suspects, and the government needs to look at this. And the government ignored that, basically decided, well, if they have allegations, let them take them to the courts themselves, civil or criminal courts.
So in that new trial in 78, the men were convicted?
Yeah. Nicky Kelly went on the run because he felt, I'm not getting a fair trial here. Oscar Branagh and Brian McNally were convicted, spent 17 months in jail. The Court of Criminal Appeal quashed their convictions.
On what grounds?
On the basis that the ruling by the court that the evidence, it basically said that the evidence against them, the weight of the evidence to suggest that the evidence against them, that they didn't suffer oppression, the weight of the evidence didn't hold that argument up. Mm. And the court should have looked at that.
And all they had against them was the statement that they had signed under duress.
Yeah. And the extraordinary thing was when Nicky Kelly comes back, he thinks, well, I'll come back now from hiding.
I'll
be exonerated as well. But no, he actually is. He goes to the Court of Criminal Appeal. They say, no, sorry, your time is up. He goes to the Supreme Court, the High Court, Supreme Court. He goes every court in the land and they basically ratify his conviction and say you must stay in jail. And that's the extraordinary thing, because he realised, I've no other recourse but to go on hunger strike.
Right, and he says in the documentary, he explains his reasons for going on hunger strike. Let's take a listen to that now.
I wasn't going to allow myself to be incarcerated illegally for something I didn't do. I felt I had no option only to go on hunger strike. I was 38 days on hunger strike. Sometimes I was getting 100 letters a day. You can't do it unless you're serious about it. And probably in some ways, the first 20, 25 days is the most difficult. After that, your body starts to readjust, then it starts to eat itself. You actually go a bit blind.
He was on hunger strike for 38 days, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
He came off hunger strike then. I mean, people were pleading with him to stop. The story didn't end there. Will you just take us through then what happened next?
Well, he got a presidential pardon in the end.
Mm-hmm.
He was released on humanitarian grounds. He still felt that wasn't enough. He was an innocent man. And he eventually got a presidential pardon, which completely exonerated him. But what one of the things I've noticed, Claire, about this is that when somebody signs a false statement against their will, their very being, their very identity has been extremely damaged. And there is very little way back from that. And state apologies and inquiries, which Nicky and Oscar haven't got, which the last week the Kerrigans and the Donnellys didn't get,
Yeah. They're
helpful. But they want public inquiry. They want public inquiry because they want the state to look into how this happened, because they want to ensure that it won't happen again to anybody else. The ripple effect on all of them is a massive. I just see it in their very beings when I'm talking to the likes of Nicky Kelly and Oscar Brannock and Martin Connolly last week. Broken men, damaged men, irretrievably damaged, because the torture they experienced is continuing so long as the government doesn't provide them with a public inquiry to ensure that it will never happen to anyone else.
And again, as you say, just like last week, the people involved in this, they want that public inquiry. That's their call.
Yes, absolutely.
OK, so it's on tonight at 9:35 on RT1 Crimes and Confessions. It's part 2 of 3, and the Kerry Babies is next week. Mick, thank you very much indeed. That's Mick Pilo.